When you want constant pulse for longer couple of minutes.
Okay. And also the visual social strategy. Because on the left hand side that is so you can move near to and to the main body that we see very much appreciated.
Thank you. Good afternoon, honorable members, and a warm welcome to the Acting Director General of the Department of Health, Dr. Yogan Pillay. I'm sure Dr. Pillay will introduce your colleague to us later. Also to the Director General of the Department of Social Development. Welcome to this Portfolio Committee meeting. Honourable members, the agenda before you today is number one, the briefing by the Minister of Health and Director General on the Department's readiness to implement Section 1 of the Social Assistance Amendment Bill, and the state of readiness to dispense chronic medication at primary health care facilities. Secondly, addressed by the Minister of Social Development and Director General on the Department's readiness to implement the Social Assistance Amendment Bill, and formal consideration and voting on the Social Assistance Amendment Bill. And then we have some internal business we have to take care of in terms of our study group tours and so on, and the areas to be visited during our oversight visits. But before we come to that, just apologies, Secretary. Any apologies?
Yes.
Okay.
The
logistics are challenging.
Any messages?
Press the button there.
Okay.
I've received three apologies of the members of Parliament. Mr. Nelson, Ms. Nelson, and I think Mr. Makakola is here, and Mr. Mafolo, and there's also an apology from the Deputy Minister, Batabile Dlabini, who is unable to join us, as well as the Minister, Honorable Molewa, who is busy with other commitments. And Honorable Kopane is also not with us. She's also in a oversight visit in Limpopo. So far, those are the apologies I've received.
Thank you. Honourable members, those are the apologies. Coming to the agenda, I would like to add one item to the agenda, and that's for that's training and leadership and climate change. Letter from the minister. Is that fine with the committee? I received a letter from the minister on training in leadership and climate change. Anyone would like to add anything to the agenda? Is it fine as is? Silence, please, consent. Thank you. Honourable members, as you know, we have the Social Assistance Amendment Bill in front of us for consideration, and the discussions of during the deliberations of the committee, we've decided that we need to request the Department of Health to come and explain to us whether they are ready for the responsibility in terms of the implementation of the bill. You've instructed the committee to deal with the matter, and we've done so. And that is why the acting DG, Dr. Jürgen Pillay, Dr. Jürgen Pillay, is here today. Now, without wasting any time, I'm going to give over to Dr. Pillay to address the committee. Over to you, Doctor.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, colleagues, firstly, good afternoon, and thank you very much for the invitation. I'd like to record the apologies of the Minister of Health, who is at the World Health Assembly, and he will be there for this entire week, so apologies from him. But I've been discussing the presentation I'm about to make with him, so he's fully au fait with what I'm going to be saying to the committee. On my left is our parliamentary officer, Mr. Joe Hartle, who is accompanying me. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I thought I will just for the record just raise the issues related to disability that I know this is ground you've already covered, but for the sake of completeness, I thought I will just record a few things. One is that we have, generally speaking, two categories of disability. One is permanent disability and the other is temporary disability. And the challenge has always been on how to define disability and how to define permanent and temporary disability. What the Department of Health's core responsibility is, I think as is well known, is to ensure that we are able to diagnose and treat patients who have any kind of disability, whether temporary or permanent, and treat them in ways that ensures that they can live a healthier life as possible, a full life as is possible. But clearly, in order to do that, there are other arms of government, other departments of government that need to play a role, and in this instance, certainly the Department of Social Development. But it includes other government departments as well. For example, the Department of the National Treasury in terms of making access funds accessible to people with disabilities, Department of Agriculture, etc. What we do know from the Department of Health is that our patients are often made indigent by their disability, especially if it's a permanent disability, and as a result, often require additional assistance from the state. I mean, that's fairly clear. What's also clear from the Department of Health is, notwithstanding the corrective measures we can take as the Department of Health from a medical point of view, our patients, to benefit maximally from treatment, will also require other forms of assistance, food and transport being but two. So in order to enable patients with disabilities, and indeed all patients, to benefit maximally from services provided by the Department of Health in the public health sector, the department has adopted, and it's codified in the strategic plan, which commenced this year, has adopted the 10-point plan, which is fairly wide-ranging and is intended to strengthen health service delivery over the next 5 years in very specific ways. Now, I can go through the 10 points, Honorable Chair, if the committee so wishes, but I think it's fairly well known, and it relates to things like strengthening the leadership down to strengthening the financing of the health system and implementing a service delivery platform that meets the needs of all our patients, both with respect to access and quality. But I thought I would lift two of these 10 points for the purposes of this discussion. One is the National Health Insurance System. The reason I'm raising the National Health Insurance System is because I think, as is well known, we have a highly unequal private and public health sectors in the country, with the private sector on average spending about 8 times more per capita on privately insured patients than we can in the public health sector. So this means that for every 1 rand we spend on a patient in the public health sector, the private sector will spend about 8 rands. Now, that speaks to both access and quality of care, clearly. The big problem is not only with financing, it's also with access to human resources. As you know, there's a defined number of doctors, nurses, pharmacists, etc., and also the therapists in the country. The bulk of many of these categories are in the private sector. And I think, as is also well known, the private sector takes care of about 20% of the population, whereas the public sector takes care of 80% of the population. So the National Health Insurance System intends to do two things, broadly speaking. The design of the National Health Insurance System is under discussion, so I can't give you any definitive views on the direction that the design will take. But what I can say is that there are two issues that the National Health Insurance System seeks to address. One is the financing of healthcare and the way in which all of the current financing available in both the public and the private sectors can be or should be pooled to maximally benefit all of the patients in the country. The second, of course, is on the service delivery side. We need to find ways of ensuring more equitable access to the resources, all of the resources in the health sector, so that the 8-to-1 ratio that I mentioned previously can be eliminated. And clearly, any national health insurance system will, by design, benefit people with disability with respect to access to care, maximum correction of any disability where that is possible, and thirdly, improving quality of care. The second of the 10 points that I want to lift, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, is the issue of overhauling the healthcare system and improving its management. I think it's fairly well known and fairly well documented, including in the British journal called The Lancet in September last year, that while we've made a fair amount of progress since 1994, there are still continuing challenges in the healthcare system of the country. And this particular point seeks to address the key challenges that we've identified together with our key partners in strengthening the healthcare system. And I'll come back to some of the specifics later. With that as background, Honourable Chair, can I speak to the issue of readiness to implement the Social Assistance Amendment Bill should it be passed by the Honourable Members of this committee and then the Houses of Parliament? The bill specifically will require the Department of Health, using the new definition of disability and the use of the harmonized assessment tool, to diagnose and treat patients with disabilities. Now, clearly this is done as a matter of course anyway, but what it will do, if passed, is ensure that we have one standard with respect to the definition of disability and one standard with respect to its assessment applied throughout the country, and that's really what the bill, from the point of view of the Health Department, seeks to achieve. Now, clearly the Department of Health, besides being able to diagnose and treat patients in line with the new act should it be passed, we will also have to ensure easy access to patients, both to diagnosis and treatment. This means that we will have to have many more people trained to diagnose patients or assess patients using the new harmonized assessment tool. And once they are assessed to be eligible for grants, then in a sense making it possible for them to access the social assistance grants available to them. While we have piloted the tool, we have not started training all of the categories of health professionals who can be eligible to do the assessment. So there is quite a massive task that lies ahead of us should the bill be passed in its current form and passed by this parliament, because we have not yet started the training. The other big challenge, of course, is, as I said previously, is the number of health professionals we have in the healthcare system, especially occupational therapists, physiotherapists, and other therapists that could do the assessment should the bill be passed in its current form. So clearly we would need some time to do the assessment. We'll need to mobilize additional warm bodies in terms of health professionals and then do the training in order to ensure that they are able to use the tool in ways that is credible, reliable, and valid. However, there is a bigger challenge, and the bigger challenge is some of the issues I spoke to in my introductory remarks, and that is being able to provide the best possible care outside of medical treatment. And by that I mean improving access to treatment and decreasing barriers to care. The government has, since 1994, adopted the primary healthcare approach to strengthen the healthcare system of the country and has used that as a foundation for the healthcare system. Truth be told, though, this remains one of the challenges that we are dealing with. While we have significantly more people using primary health care, access to primary health care is still uneven and probably least possible in many of the remote and rural areas. It's not surprising, then, that one of the 20 deliverables that the minister will have to deliver during his term of office is strengthening primary health care. So in the strategic plan, one of the 20 deliverables that we have mentioned is reviewing the model of primary healthcare delivery and strengthening the service delivery platform at primary healthcare level. Now, we can do this in two ways. One, we can build more clinics. And that is a necessary condition, but clearly not a sufficient condition. And it's not sufficient because if we use the primary healthcare approach, which has been adopted by the department, sanctioned by the World Health Organization, amongst others, we will have to go much further than providing treatment in clinics. The primary healthcare approach assumes that we provide services at the closest point of contact with communities, which means that we have to provide services at household and community level, not just at the primary healthcare facility level. Secondly, it implies significant community participation and community involvement, both in the planning, monitoring, and rendering of services. And this is probably most cogent when it comes to community and household care, but it also relates to care we provide at our facilities. Thirdly, and probably equally importantly, is the provision of services in an intersectoral manner. Now, I must admit that this is also easier said than done. What it means is that at community level and at the lowest possible point of service delivery, we must be able to structure the services offered by government in ways that integrate services across government departments. So, for example, it would mean that if someone requires access to a social assistance grant of any form, that person will have no barriers of access. If that person requires access to food, that person will have no barriers to access. If that person needs access to transport, that person will, especially if that person has a disability of some kind, that person will not have any barriers to accessing specialized transport. Now, I think honorable members will know that government has done a fair bit in doing all of those things in the last 15 or 16 years, but clearly we are not close to having a perfect system. And the intention of the department, certainly in the next 5 years, working with our sister departments, is to try and ensure that we implement primary health care in that way, using the primary health care approach. Because we are not anywhere close to doing that, I can't say that there are no barriers to access primary health care services, whether it be for diagnosis or treatment, and whether it be for acute treatment or chronic treatment at present in every part of the country. And we can see this, I guess, best described by the challenges we have in providing emergency medical services in rural areas. The confidential inquiries into maternal care, which measures why women in childbirth die and what can be done about it, has shown quite clearly that an unacceptable number of women who are pregnant die because they can't reach our health facilities in time when they have obstetric emergencies, when they're in trouble during labor. So that's, I think, a good example of the fact that we have not been able to make services available everywhere in the way in which we know we need to. Now, we can't lament our challenges forever. We will clearly need to put in place measures to address those challenges. And I want to highlight just a few of the measures that I lifted out of the strategic plan so that the honorable members have a sense of what it is that we are doing over the next 3 years to strengthen primary health care and improve access to care, including chronic care. While I'm sure honorable members don't have our strategic plan in front of you, pages 86 to 88 of the strategic plan lists a series of key initiatives that we have started to implement to strengthen primary health care over the next 3 years. And honorable chair, honorable members, they start from reviewing the model of primary health care delivery through to doing an audit of primary health care services and facilities and human resources, which has already started, to look at exactly where the problems are and what needs to be done specifically. Our view now is that we can't take a one-size-fits-all approach, that we need to have a more targeted and focused approach to implementing primary health care services so that we can reach even the deepest rural area. With respect to the model of primary health care, Honorable Chair, we have currently about 60,000 community health workers in the system. Now, if you add to that the community caregivers that work together with us from social development, if you add to that the community development workers, if you add extension workers in agriculture, it soon becomes clear that we have a plethora of community-level workers working with and alongside many government departments, but often in silos. And the key challenge now is at community and household level to integrate that cadre of health worker and development worker and social assistance worker. We do know that there are good models in our country and elsewhere. And one of the elsewheres is Brazil. Brazil has, over a very short period of time, within about a 10-year period, able to reduce infant and child mortality from significantly high levels to very, very low levels. And they did this, Honorable Chair, by changing the way in which they deliver services. So from the health sector point of view, they have a cadre of three health professionals working together responsible for a catchment area. So we are going to look at that model to see whether that model is suitable for our country. So that's on the model side. I've spoken already about the audit side. There are a number of initiatives to strengthen primary health care. Clearly, health promotion, the prevention of disease and disability, should be the mainstay of our interventions. And our strategic plan includes a number of health promotion activities that includes immunization. You would know, Honorable Chair, that we currently just completed a national immunization campaign that included vaccination against polio. And as you know, polio is a disease that can leave people highly vulnerable to disabilities. And we are quite lucky that we've not had any cases. But because there's still wild polio virus circulating on the continent and elsewhere, we have taken the decision to continuously vaccinate children against polio, for example. So there are a number of initiatives on the prevention side. Healthy lifestyles programs, I think we've had a number of them. I won't repeat them for the sake of time. But clearly we will need to ramp up our healthy lifestyles programs around chronic diseases like diabetes, cardiovascular diseases, hypertension, and some cancers, because they are all amenable to preventive interventions. And as we know, we have a growing incidence of obesity amongst children, school-going children. So there are critical interventions that we need to put in place both at the home, at the family level, and at schools with respect to physical activity. So there are a number of things we need to do and must do on the issue of healthy lifestyles. And then on the issue of risky behavior, we know that our HIV incidence rates are high. We know that our TB incidence rate is high. We know that we have far too many people still smoking, despite very good legislation. We know that we still have too many people drinking alcohol irresponsibly. Andrew, yes, I'm coming to that, honorable member. We know that we have too many people drinking alcohol irresponsibly. So there are things to be done about all of that. And we know, for example, in this province, we have a big drug addiction problem, including tic. So there are a number of things we need to do about risky behavior that no single department can do, but the society we need to address. But all of them contribute to disabilities of one kind or another. Whether they be an addiction, which is a disability, because if you apply the harmonized assessment tool, it's quite likely that if you have a severe addiction, you might not be able to function in society. So we mustn't forget the risky behaviors that contribute to disabilities. So there must be an onus on all of us in partnership to ensure that we take all of the preventive interventions we can to prevent disabilities. We often forget that the elderly are often robbed of their eyesight through cataracts, and that just by doing cataract surgery, we can restore the sight of many elderly and improve their quality of life immeasurably by doing cataract surgery. So we have a program in place and have had for a while now to increase the rate of cataract surgeries in the country. And we've been working with a number of partners to increase the rate of cataract surgeries we do, including with some of our international partners. We have a program to increase diabetes control in the country, because diabetes, as you know, together with hypertension, has been increasing over time. And the diabetes uncontrolled will lead to amputations, and will therefore lead to a disability which is of a permanent nature because of inability to walk and be mobile. And that's something we can do something about. So we shouldn't focus on just the end point, which is providing wheelchairs for people who are disabled and taking those kinds of corrective measures. We must ensure that we have corrective preventive measures in place, because there are things we can do about diabetes and by extension, hypertension. Honourable Chair, we are in the process of finalising a chronic disease model of service delivery. This has come about not only because we are dealing with a fourth epidemic, which is our non-communicable diseases, which are diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular, and cancers, but also because almost by definition now, HIV and AIDS have become a chronic disease. Chronic in the sense that, and this is where the definition of chronic disease becomes imperative to clearly articulate, that it's chronic in the sense that you will need to be on treatment for the rest of your life. So from a health point of view, chronic means being on treatment forever, that if you can't be cured. And so a simple definition of chronicity then means you can't be cured by any kind of intervention, whether it's surgical or medication. So HIV and AIDS then is a, in that, using that definition, a chronic disease. But by definition, it's not a disability, because it does not mean that if you are HIV positive or you have AIDS, that you will not be able to function, right? Depending on what the scope of functionality is. So it's possible then that using the hat, that somebody who's diagnosed either with TB, hypertension, diabetes, epilepsy, any one of the chronic diseases, may not be disabled. And I think that's an important distinction to be made. The question, though, is, taking disability away, for chronic diseases, what do we do? One is prevention, the second is corrective measures. And the third is, because, as I said before, many people with chronic diseases also, like people with disabilities, slide into poverty. And we know that. And it's caused by many things. Inability to work sometimes, social stigma at other times, the cost of accessing healthcare services, okay, because of the opportunity costs rather than the cost of treatment itself, can all drive people. And, you know, illness can be a catastrophic event. And if it's catastrophic to that extent, you can slide into poverty. And for that, we need social assistance. We cannot treat poverty with a health intervention. We must have the right tools and the right remedies aimed at the right challenges. But clearly what we need is an integrated approach. And I think that's the key to I think what we are trying to do between ourselves and the Department of Social Development. So in this chronic disease model, the idea is to figure out how we then ensure that people with chronic diseases have easy access to healthcare services, including medication. And one of the key things is to provide a mechanism for patients to get treated at home and get their medication delivered to them. Now, with respect to the last Honorable Chair, which is access to chronic medication, the Western Cape is already providing chronic medication closer to patients than many other provinces. We've had a pilot program in KwaZulu-Natal also looking at how to deliver chronic medications to patients. And we will be starting, together with Gauteng, the Northwest, Northern Cape, and Limpopo, pilot projects in order to facilitate improving access of chronic meds to patients. One of the big problems, of course, is that patients have to come to facilities to collect their chronic medication. And what the intention is one, to have the intervals between when they need to come and collect chronic medications extended. So, for example, for HIV, we started off with monthly visits. It's now 2 monthly visits, and we are thinking of moving it to 3 monthly visits. So where we can't deliver the medication to patients, the idea is to make the period of visits to hospitals as infrequent as possible. Where we can, we will be on a pilot basis first and then on a scale-up basis within the next 3 years, taking medication to patients. Now, we've done some of the costing work, and depending on which provider you use, it might cost on the average about 22 rands, on average, depending on distance, of course, to get a private provider to provide a basket of medicines to a patient at home. So we are looking at this model and extending this model. So, Chair, in conclusion, let me say that we are of the opinion that we are not ready to use the harmonized assessment tool for the reasons I've suggested. And perhaps more importantly, we are in the process of strengthening our primary healthcare services so we can provide an integrated and comprehensive service to patients, including patients who have disabilities and patients who are not disabled but have one or other chronic disease. So, Chair, I think I'll leave it there, but we'll be happy to engage in a discussion about some of the things I said and others. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pillay, for that presentation. I trust all members all have copies of the presentation. Honourable members, on that note, I'm sure it's not a happy note. Is there any questions? Clarity? Honourable Member Lamula, Honourable Member Tswete, Honourable Member Makakula.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Dr. Pillay for the presentation. But to me, it is rather a sad story. It is indeed a very sad story. You said we are not any way close to meeting the challenges or rendering quality health care. So why change? Why start changing the small percentage of healthcare that is still working excellently? Why are we changing what is working at present? And why are we not trying to get whatever is not working up to standard before starting implementing new strategies that every time, every year when I sit in committee, departments comes with strategies that they want to implement, and by the end of the year when I evaluate, nobody has reached or they've reached very little of what they intended to do. You know, the rural areas and remote rural areas are the ones suffering most. If it was not so, and even provinces now. And I do not know if you are aware of the migration into only the Western Cape. Is about 63,000 now per year. That is plus minus 63,000 per year. Why does people come? Just yesterday when I spoke to somebody, she said, you know, Ellen, my gardener comes from KZN just to get medical treatment in our province. You know what the weekend papers were like. You know what the weekend papers said. And the one small town that was mentioned there, Dr. Pillay, is Humansdorp, where I come from. I am so worried. I am so concerned of what will happen to those people. How will they have access to quality health care, which we as a government promised to those people and cannot deliver now? Which hospital can operate on 30% of its budget or 26% of its budget? Did you ever go into Livingstone Hospital or Doran Ginza and view what is happening there? They are trying their level best. They are really very stretched. They are trying to do whatever they can, but they can only do as much or as little as they have with resources. I plead with the government and I plead with the department, please do not demobilize or demolish whatever is working. Just keep on keeping it on until we can make a change. We cannot at this time. And for many years we will not be able to, because in the 15 years we could not. We have reached some goals, but we could not reach our goal. Community development workers, health workers, and we visited them in Mpumalanga. Those people do not even have the resources, so please don't count them in your program or your strategic plan. Because you know, they don't even have gloves to do the necessities with. They need to use condoms. They need to use condoms to just perform some of the necessities that they need to do. Is it because they're rural area? Is it because they're poor people that they are treated like that? Will the healthcare budget, will we be able to implement what we are now trying to tell the committee here? Will we be able to? Because the committee that I'm serving on in SASA, their budget still just cannot take the pressure. They cannot perform. You saw that in the papers of yesterday. Our people still have to wait long queues outside. It's still happening to our hospitals. It's still happening to our clinics, especially in the rural areas. And I've got photos of what I took when visiting the rural areas on these issues. I will be doing the very same thing on Wednesday up till Friday again in the rural areas. Brazil is not South Africa. They are far more advanced than South Africa. And we cannot compare with South Africa. National shortages of doctors. Yeah, national shortages of doctors is a challenge to us, and it has always been a challenge to us. Training should first come in before we move on this plan that we have. And then my main question on this disability issue, who will determine the disability of the person applying for the grant? Will it be a specialized person or will it be an ordinary GP? I'll just stop there for a while, but I've got more. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable members, just a word of caution. The acting DG Pillay is not responsible for healthcare per se in the province. Okay.
But he's presenting to us, so we need to...
No, he is the acting DG for the National Department of Health.
Oh, okay. But I need to put my question.
No, I don't have a problem with you putting your question, but I just wanted to make the areas of responsibility clear to
me.
Thank you. Honourable Member Lamula, will you please switch off your microphone?
Sorry, thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Member Tsweta?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I want to start by thanking you particularly for your leadership style, because when we started this, after looking and listening to public hearings, there were clear, some of the issues that were raised in the public hearing, the submissions, it was clear, and some of the issues that they've raised, and I'm clear that they are here now, it's the issues that we all know, and we're saying we can't pass this bill before we meet the Department of Health. Yes, and I'm very happy for that, because you didn't rush for this bill to be passed, and you decided that after listening to public hearings, let us listen to the readiness of Health Department. I also want to thank the Department of Health for being honest to us and tell us the truth that they are not ready. Because of the issues that you all know, some of the issues that you know, the Dr. Pillay is raising is the issues that we know. We visited, I'm very happy that I've been the member of Health Department before, member of Health Portfolio Committee before coming to Social Development. We visited hospitals in Sifia Makiwane. There were queues, and we're told that they don't have pharmacists because of the number of pharmacists that are now being taken by private sectors. Most pharmacists, they go to clicks. The clicks have dispensary now. So all pharmacists, they go for better options or green vouchers. So the issues that you raised, Dr. Pillay, the integrated approach, we agree with you that we need to do that. And also for telling us that you are not ready for the assessment tool, which I agree with you, because I know some of the things, we don't live in the sky. We live in the constituencies. We know what is happening in our constituencies. Our people are still depending on grants because of poverty, because of high number of unemployed, and those issues were raised by in the public hearings by those submissions that were made to us, and some of them were aware of those, that they are happening. And thank again for being honest to say we are not ready as health, because for us, as this committee, we cannot go ahead and pass this clause without making sure that everything is right in the communities, or the health department is ready to do this. And I agree with you when you say the harmonized assessment tool should be standardized, because the way it is used now is not uniform. Presentations were made to us by SASA and other entities. They were telling us about all the obstacles and challenges that we have. We agree there are challenges in the health department. They're not only by their own making, by the nature of professionals going, doctors leaving the health department and going to other countries, that we know. We know that in our clinics there are no medications. We're still suffering for a number of the professional nurses in our clinics. We don't have drugs in our clinics, that we know. So therefore, I feel that, Chair, we should not go ahead with this clause until everything is okay. We will then, before we pass this clause, we will again have this kind of meeting and hear from you, Department of Health, whether we are happy or not. That's my appeal, Chair. I strongly appeal that we don't go ahead with this clause, because we don't want to disadvantage our people either. These are our sisters. there are members of families, some of them we know that they are not, they depend on grants, and we want to make an appeal, humbly appeal to the DG of Social Development and you, Dr. Pillay, that we hold until we are ready. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member Twitter. Honourable Member Makakula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Member Twitter has been stealing some of my words. The Department of Health said they are not ready. I think, Chairperson, we can't just waste time and sit here. It's obvious. We can't just proceed with this bill. The Department of Health, and I would like to thank you, Chairperson, by allowing also the department to come and present. Because now we know that the Department of Health is not ready, so we can't proceed with this bill until the two departments sort their things. Let's reverse the bill, and then it will be come back when the things are fine. I thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd just like to strengthen the point that was brought up, that we can clearly see, and I'm glad that the Department of Health, you know, spoke truthfully to us that they are not ready. And I think next time when they come back to us, then they should at least put some time frames into place. Because I'm interested, you know, on how far is the model. But I agree with the members that at this moment in time, we will not be able to put through this amendment. Thank you.
Can I ask Dr. Pillay just to respond to some of the questions raised? And then also the DG from the Department of Social Development can then also, if he has any responses that he would like to, comments that you would like to raise at this stage. Then we will be going over to the next process on the agenda, since there's a proposal on the table that the committee needs to consider, and that has been seconded already.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, thank you very much. Honourable Lawana, I must say I didn't intend to raise issues outside of the presentation, but I mean, the issues you raise are true. There are serious challenges in the health system. I think, though, that there is both a qualitative and quantitative difference in the leadership we are seeing currently at all levels. And I certainly am confident that you will see changes soon. The problem with systems, as you know, Honourable Member, is that even with the best intentions, some things do take a while. The problem is that we can't wait for things to bed down. So we need to figure out what are those things where we can make some quick wins so that we can show changes. I'll give you one example of a quick win. The MEC for Health in Gauteng put a new manager into Barra, Kusani Barra Hospital. And By the admission of patients, they've seen a change in simple things, cleanliness of the hospital and in shorter queues. So if it can be done in Barra, you know, which is one of the largest hospitals in the Southern Hemisphere, it can be done elsewhere. But we need the right kind of management at the coalface, even as we need more resources. Now, on the resources side, for the public sector, we had our first meeting with National Treasury last Friday. To look at areas where there are serious budget pressures. Now, most provinces, as you know, honourable members, have significant accruals over the last 3-4 years. So each year you will find that they run out of their budgets earlier and earlier. So our discussion with Treasury was to look at the levels of funding to the health sector, and I think there's an acknowledgement that the public health sector is underfunded fairly significantly, and we need to do something about it. The challenge, though, is that all other sectors are equally underfunded. So even as we improve financial management and efficiency, we need to ensure that we do get some new funds into the public health sector. There are any number of examples of small changes, improvements in the health sector. And, I mean, I won't take up the time of the committee to tell you about those, but I think there is concern, and I certainly share your concerns, but there's also, I think, a sense of optimism with the new leadership we have, that things are moving in the right direction. And we see that most spectacularly, I think, with HIV and AIDS, and now TB, but we'll also see it in maternal and child care soon, with respect to decreasing maternal mortality and infant mortality. And we've set ourselves some really stiff targets with respect to decreasing mortality rates in under-5s and maternal mortality. And I think with the measures we're putting in place, we will achieve it. That's not to say that we will do everything right everywhere. And clearly, there are many challenges. Who will do the assessment was a specific question. The idea with the HAT is to improve access and to decrease the time people have to wait in order to be assessed. And the HAT is designed in a way that will allow any trained health professional, does not have to be a medical doctor, to do the assessment. So that's one of its advantages. Clearly, what we need to put in place as well are checks and balances to ensure that the assessment is conducted reliably and validly. Now, on the validity side, the tool is a valid tool, so it takes care of that. But the issue of reliability, and by that I mean the inability to crook the tool or crook the result, because we need to have then some kind of checks and balances in the system that will ensure that I don't... You see, what's happened currently is that the reason health professionals give people access to grants when they are not necessarily eligible is because when people are poor and you're confronted with poverty, you want to find out what you can do about helping them. And many health professionals, not all, will then declare someone eligible even when they know they're not from a strict medical point of view. Right. So in the implementation of the HAT, should the HAT be implemented and when it is implemented, we need to have the same kinds of checks and balances to ensure that that tool is not, in a sense, misused. But the intention is to have registered health professionals of various categories assessing patients using the HAT. Honourable Member also asked about some time frames. I did discuss this with the Minister, and the Minister said that I should convey to you that what's in the strategic plan will be implemented with speed, and many of the things I've highlighted, Honourable Member, are in the strategic plan, so it's something we are doing. So, for example, the chronic disease model is currently being planned, it's being designed, and will be in this financial year implemented in 3 districts in the country. So we will know by March what works and what doesn't work in terms of an integrated comprehensive chronic disease care delivery model, right, in 3 districts. So, and that's already in our operational plans. We can, I think, in discussion with the Department of Social Development, further elaborate all of the issues that we need to focus on with respect to when next we come to this committee and what time frames we can put in place to ensure that next time around we don't present a piece of legislation for your consideration without being ready to implement it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jürgen Pillay. Give over to the Director General of the Department of Social Development. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the Deputy Minister for Social Development. Welcome, the Honourable Deputy Minister. There is time for a political career, DJ. The Director General for Social Development.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope that it is honourable for me to have accepted the position of Director General of Social Development. So it's an honourable thing to do. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and honourable members, for giving us an opportunity to speak on this matter. Having listened to my colleague from the Department of Health, whether or not social development is ready is of no consequence, because I say so advisedly, because social development and SASA do not make the assessment of disability. We depend entirely on the Department of Health to do that, which means that if health is not ready, it effectively means that government is not ready. It means social development itself is not ready. From our side, we thought that we have put systems in place. We have processed the bill with a view to giving effect to a definition which was passed by Cabinet in 2005. But clearly, in this regard, we will have to act in concert with the Department of Health. And if the Department of Health is not ready, as frankly as it has stated it, it would serve no purpose for us to pretend that we could do anything with those specific clauses relating to the new definition of disability. But, Madam Chair, if you will permit me, I noticed that the various clauses in the bill relate pretty much to the definition of disability. In a sense, that definition has consequences for clauses 1, 2, I think 3, 4, 5 and 6 of the bill. But I would like to make a special appeal for this committee. Whilst it considers its views on the process relating to disability, and there are suggestions already that perhaps those clauses should not be passed, I would still make a special appeal that at least this committee should consider clause 7 of the bill dealing with the reconsideration by the agency and the appeal system. Because we believe that whilst we are getting our house in order with regard to issues relating to the definition, we should still allow applicants of social grants some administrative justice, allowing SASA to reconsider its decision in the event that an aggrieved applicant believes that SASA may arrive at a different decision if somebody else were to look at the same matter. The same clause reaffirms the right of appeal, which is in the current legislation. So our appeal would essentially be that, Madam Chair. In this regard, SASA has made the necessary preparations for it to give effect to the reconsideration of its decisions. It has set systems in place, which systems will obviously need to grow over time for them to be perfect. But we believe that we are in a position to commence entertaining requests by any applicant who is aggrieved by a decision that SASA makes in the first instance, for such a decision to be reconsidered by SASA before an aggrieved applicant may exercise their right of appeal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, the DG of Health, Acting DG of Health, Dr. Jürgen Pillay, as well as the DG for Social Development. Honourable members, in front of us, we have the next point on the agenda, which is actually linked to the first two, which is a formal consideration and the voting on the Social Assistance Amendment Bill. Now, there's a proposal that has been made that we do not accept the proposed amendments, sorry, the proposed definition on disability, which is, if members could go to the bill, which is obviously clause 1, and then the related clauses in the bill itself. Because if you do not approve clause 1, we can't approve the other clauses in the bill. And obviously, that will also go for the amendments that we discussed with the committee previously. Okay. And the DGS has made a plea with the committee to consider that we consider the following recommendations: that we clause 7 remains on the box that deals with the following section is hereby substituted for section 18 of the Principal Act, the reconsideration of a decision by agency at appeal. So that one. Okay. That remain. Do we have objection to that process? Is there a contrary proposal to the proposal that has been made and seconded? None. Thank you. Honourable members, and I'm going to need the guidance of. Yeah.
For everything, for the whole bill to stand over.
The whole of the bill?
Yeah, let's revise everything.
Honourable members, I refer to the fact that Section 1 up to Section 6, if you look clearly, you listen to what the DJ said. And I think Honourable Member Tweete also alluded to the issue of disability in the proposal. That is how I even summarized it here. So it would be your section that deals with, if we all go back to the bill itself, if you look at the sections, I think, is it 1 to 6? I've noted the state law advisor deals with the issues around disability, right? So it's your definition on disability and then the matters related therewith in terms of disability, of disability. Then section 7 deals with the appeals process of grant. It's like reconsiderations of appeals by the agency. So it's basically, as the DG said, it's your administrative justice issues that is contained in that amendment, in that section. The state law advisor?
Madam Chair, just a point. Clause 2 of the bill doesn't refer to disability. That is just a correction. When the bill was passed, there was a wrong reference to Section 17. It should be Section 16, and it's quite a big mistake, so I would suggest that we keep Clause 2. And also, Chair, the department last time made a suggestion that there's also a in clause section 14 of the Act is a consequential where the person has the right to be told of the fact that he has now right also to reconsideration of his right of reconsideration of the request for reconsideration. Sorry. So that could also maybe be entertained by the committee.
Yeah. No, it's not. Members, you shouldn't be confused. What the state law advisor is saying, that section, that clause 2 of the bill is like I almost say generic, but it is almost a rechtstelling, Honourable Member Lamula, but any word that is that now theory what is amendment in Afrikaans? Die wysigingswet. Wet ontwerp nou reggestel word. So dis basies 'n regstelling. Né? Right? So yeah. Oh, you're on 7 now. So 1, can I just from members itself, do we agree that then section as the advice from the state law advisor that what that section 2 remains? Okay, thank you. Yeah.
This amended bill has been scrutinized by our caucus, so I cannot, at this point in time, vote on anything other than what I have in front of me. it's been put to our caucus, and we've scrutinized, and we've decided on it. So if anything, any amendment is being done on what we have in front of us, I cannot assist you.
No, I think what Honourable Member doesn't understand is no amendment. This is in the bill itself. Yeah. Okay. No. Honourable Member Lamula, you are confused. You are confused, yeah. Yeah. Honourable Member Tweeter, do you want to do that?
No, Chair, I don't want to do that. All I want is that we start, even if it's a long process, we read Section 1, we agree, go to Section 2. If there are any amendment to be made, we raise a share, rather than saying Section 1 up to 7, we agree.
Mm.
Let's read from Section 1. I know it's going to be a long process, but let's for the sake of understanding what we are voting for, for everybody to understand. I have that feeling.
No, fine, Honourable Member. Let's do it that way. I just want to draw members' attention to Rule 249, Subsection 3G, that provides that a portfolio committee may recommend approval or rejections of a bill or present with its report an amendment bill or redraft of the bill as a rule. Now, coming to the bill, and I would like the legal advisor and the state law advisor just to assist the committee in terms of the decision that is taken previously. When we go to the short title to the bill for consideration. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Let's go clause by clause, Honourable Member. Clause 1. Do we agree or not? Can we get a proposal?
We reject them.
Honourable Member Tweeter, close 2.
I'm still on close 1.
You're still on close 1.
Yes. Exactly. I want to say if you reject it, you must tell us why you reject it. Maybe, like, I know that there was the other members of we agreed that on the definition of disability, instead of mental disability, we should write impairment. So I thought that we'll go through that, all the issues we identified as amendments.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that's what we're doing. Correct me if I'm wrong, sir.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask the advisor just to assist. Honourable members, we've agreed that there was a proposal made by a sub-honourable member that we do not go ahead with the definition of disability.
Okay.
So it was in that spirit that I thought that we should go back to the Principal Act.
Okay.
And where we with these other proposals that we then go and look at the amendments.
Yes.
Okay. Am I correct in the answer to that?
Yes, Chair, you are correct. In that regard, you'd have to delete Section 1, Section 3, Section 4, 5, and 6.
7 would remain, and there would be a consequential amendment.
So basically,
all that would remain would be section clause 2 and 7, and there would need to be a consequential amendment in terms of clause 7 of the bill.
Honourable members got confused when I mentioned clause 2.
Yes.
Okay, you now understand. Okay, thank you. Can I make a long story short? Okay, and the way the legal advisor to the committee has put it, do we agree with that, Ruth? Thank you. No, I don't have a problem. No. What the legal advisor said is precisely what I was saying to you, but let me ask you to repeat it again.
I think in terms of the Department of Health presentation, they said that they were not ready to implement it. The proposed changes as related to disability. And in light of not being able to implement it, all the proposed amendments relating to the change in disability should be deleted, not agreed to, in other words. And in that regard, clause 2 here does not relate to that. As the state law advisor pointed out, that was a correction of a wrong reference in the Principal Act. So that's why that was there. It doesn't relate to disability or the definition whatsoever. And clause 7 deals with the reconsideration by the agency and an appeal mechanism. And in terms of that, there was also a consequential amendment relating to clause 7, which needs to then be inserted. Am I clear, Chair?
Members agree? Thank you. Yeah. Okay. That will be noted. Coming to clause 7, can I have the legal advisor, the state law advisor, just help us there, out there with the amendment, which was an amendment that the committee actually asked for when we were discussing the bill. On clause 7.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in the Principal Act, in section 14, which deals with the application for social assistance, in subsection 3B, it reads as follows: if the applicant does not 3B3, subparagraph 3, it says, I'll have to read the whole thing: if the applicant does not qualify for social assistance in terms of this act, the agency must, in writing at the applicant's address or other point of contact, state it in the application, inform the applicant, and this is of his or her right of appeal contemplated in section 18, and of the mechanism and procedure to invoke that right. Now, subparagraph 3 will have to be amended as a result of the amendment to section 18, because the reconsideration comes into play also now, so that the read must be inform of his or her right to request reconsideration, and his or her right of appeal contemplated in section 18, and of the and of the mechanism and procedure to invoke any such right. So that would be a new clause.
Okay. That's an insertion. It's more of, I would say, in terms of the rights of the applicant, really just protecting the rights of the applicant in terms of the appeal, right to notification. So, okay. Do members agree with that amendment?
Yes.
Thank you. Then we go to the short title.
of the bill. Can the State Law Advisor help us? Is there any changes that need to be fixed?
Madam Chair, the short title will stay the same, but the long title will have to be in front of the first part of the act. The long title will have to be adjusted also then, just to leave out just to insert the definition and to further regulate the eligibility for a disability grant. That will also have to come out.
The long title is put to the committee, accepted. There's a short title. So it's a long title that needs to be redrafted. Okay. As the State Law Advisor said. Honourable Member Twitter? You're fine. Honourable Members, so in effect there's three amendments that have been put to the committee. Section clause 2 that will remain. Clause 7 that will remain, with the amendment on clause 7, and then also the long title that needs to be changed. Do the members agree on those amendments and those changes? Thank you. The objection of the Democratic Alliance is noted. So the report of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development will then read. At the Portfolio Committee on Social Development, having considered the subject of the Social Assistance Amendment Bill, Bill 5 of 2010, National Assembly, Section 75, referred to it and classified by the joint tagging mechanism as a Section 6 bill and not the 75 bill, reports the bill with amendments. Just whether this report is correct, legal advisor. Okay. But also in terms of the report, could we also then refer the rejected clauses back to Cabinet for reconsideration? In the words of the acting DG said that they will come back to us when they are ready. Okay? Right. Do we need to wait? Do we want to break for a short while so that those amendments can just be typed and brought back to the committee, or is it fine? It's fine? I can just sign off on it. Thank you very much, honourable members. We've been... Yeah, that's what we said. We said that the clauses we rejected. Yeah. We're fine. The liberal advisor will help you. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, honourable members. We've dispensed with that item. We will now go. Would members like to take a 5-minute body break quickly? And then we come back. We have two items on the agenda. That's the discussion on preparations for the study tour of the Portfolio Committee, as well as areas to be visited during our oversight period. Thank you. Thank you.
also on the first seven.
Okay, you want to know exactly which ones? All right, no.
That doesn't help me.
No, it's fine.
If you just look at this list,
This is what I've been working on since yesterday.
Yeah.
Because when we refer the questions, they come with different numbers.
Okay.
And not only the ones that please have been tabled. You see, this is all that I've got of questions. That's a hell of a lot of questions that have to be. And these are in the provinces which must be consolidated. And some of these questions are new questions, and that's a duplicate question. So you have to know exactly
which ones were
corrected, which ones were rejected, and things like that.
Okay, I'll let you know which ones were there. No, I'll let you know which ones there.
I hear you,
unit, or maybe somewhere on my desk, I'm not sure. I think I opened the office, being I see Anna yet. I'm going to just check it's open, because I was looking for that older person thing. Leandro, you're my older person's booklet. You remember earlier, before you spoke. Yeah. And then Lea is going Ipima. No. Ipi, Le, Begaya Guya today. It was entirely Sasuba Pay, I think by 30, then were 3. Because the program said from 12 to 3. So good PM is here now. Yeah, she's here with you. She's a good portfolio. Yay. No. It's the councillor of the ward. The ward councillor is only invited. Eh? I think it was an event that was arranged by the ward council. Yay. A ward 93. The name of the ward councillor? The name of the ward councillor is Councillor Jelele. I don't know what happened. Yes. I'll forward you her number now. I'll forward you her number. You need that also. Oh, okay. I thought you needed. Thank you. Okay, so. Okay, master.
Grumbling.
Give me all the beauty food.
No, I'm grumbling.
Otherwise,
I don't know
who's in charge of this thing, but then if they want it by Thursday, we try and negotiate it one more time so that we can have the passage. Because if we go to the submitter, we have to authorize the program. If you don't do it, it's also good to test for
more time. I'm not a good person.
Thank you very much.
Can I give you a piece of paper?
Where are
you going to
get your money? What paper is
that?
Where are you going to get your money?
So the letter only arrived late afternoon. But I put the letter that we should go ahead and and first of all, we must start on the first of all.
Yeah.
I've asked the DG of Social Development to remain, the advisor of the minister to remain, the DDG for Social Security, am I correct, to remain, the chief acting chief of staff of the minister to remain, and the acting CEO of SASSA to remain. I think I've got all the titles correct. Am I correct? Just for us to discuss a few issues. Now, let me start with the last matter, the areas to be visited during oversight visits. We're going to have time available. When is that, Committee Secretary? In
July until the 9th of August.
The 1st of July?
When you come back to the 20th, from the 19th. The 19th until the...
The 19th of July to?
To the 9th of August.
To the 9th of August. Okay, I'll really appreciate members to do is just to think about areas where we can do oversight visits. If there's any preferences that members have, areas that you think that we should go to, institutions that we should visit, especially around the resolutions that we took in the committee. And then we can discuss it in our next portfolio meeting next week, and then we can when we are away, I don't know whether Parliament will be closed. during the World Cup will be open?
No. It's from the 4th of June until 19th of July. It's constituency
of
the World Cup.
But Lindiwe and team will be the main.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now that is what I wanted to know. Because if we can make up our minds where we want to go to, then Lindiwe can and your Liswa can then start preparing the oversight visit, put it together. So that when we come back we just go. Okay? So that is in terms of the announcement. Honourable Member Twitter.
Chair, I don't want to use the word confused because I think most of the time in the morning I was helped by, because once I sit next to Honourable Lamula I become confused with because she always has her meetings next to me and not listening properly and raise all the things to me, so I won't sit next to you.
Sorry, when you got me, the fact that you started this conversation.
Sir, I'm not quite sure whether you're talking about the oversight visit to other countries or oversight visit local. If we talk about local, we have a very critical, the Northwest offices that were told about, and then thereafter there was a presentation by SASSA to say everything now is fine. So I think we should, because we listen to them and then we said we'll go for oversight. Come again, sir? Correct me, I don't mind. Okay. I was going to say there are two places that I know. Saying it, Neaki. There are two places that I know that are critical. It's the Northwest and the Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape. Those two, Chair. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
When we do our oversight, I would have loved SASSA not even to know where we're going, because they can also now pass it on to their offices and say, the portfolio committees, come and get your things up to standard. I would really like to do unannounced visits. Because with an unannounced visit, you really get to the core of the problem, and then you can rectify. And I've done that several times. I'm doing it for the balance of this week, too. And you'll be surprised what comes out of it. Prachtig waren, skokkende goed. So I think SASSA must not know where we're going. We'll go to the Eastern Cape, and we'll go to Northwest. But we will not, we will not tell them to which entities of SASSA we'll be going. Said with great respect, it can only help us, and it can help the department. And you know, I so much want the departments to be up and running, to be excellent departments, so that we can at least reach our goals, fulfill our strategic plans. But we cannot do it if there's nobody telling you where the shortfalls are. And that's the only reason why we're doing it. That's the only policing that we want to do. Not to say you're not doing your work. I think you really, SASSA, I think it's the seventh year that I'm with SASSA. And they have improved. Though they have long queues here, it's not happening in the rural areas anymore because they have installed so many service points, three service points and one pay point, which was, it was never there in the past. So I think we must not let SASSA know where we're going. I think we must make and do unannounced visits. If they're not ready, they're not ready. Each and every day, if you work for anybody, you need to be ready. Your books need to be in order. Your systems need to be up and going, and there need not be any problem in the department. Thank you.
Honourable members, I think we're going to have constituency week from the 7th to of June to the 16th of July, right? Oversight will be from the 19th of July up to the 6th of August. Now, I'm sure, I think that implies oversight locally.
Mm.
So from the 19th to the 6th of August, we'll have oversight. Now, I think what we can do, we can take 5 or 7 days out of this oversight, because I'm sure other members also, they're also, you also sit in other committees. So we don't take over the whole oversight. Now, during the constituency period, I expect, I think members will do that unexpected visits to SASSA offices, to secure care centers, places of safety, orphanages, and so on. But when we do oversight as a committee, it has to be more organized. Now, one thing that I know, you can't paintbrush something that has gone wrong for a long time, because that thing won't work. You can't clean up queues 2 weeks before the committee comes. You can't clear up those queues unless you work and you bring in a whole army of people. So it's like when we went to the offices of SASSA in Guguletu. When we came there, the queues were still there. People were still sitting, they were still queuing. So you can do PR, but you can only do PR up to a certain extent. If your system is not right, it's not right. It's not going to work, you know. And I'm sure we will smell the wet paint if we get there. And things have been spruced up, and you can see things have been done. And we will connote those things. But if we want to go and visit a secure care center in the Eastern Cape, we also need to go and touch base with the Portfolio Committee of Social Development in the Eastern Cape. So there needs to be that kind of preparation. I think because even, I want us even to link, honorable members, the issue of visiting secure centers with substance abuse problems and so on. What I also asked the committee secretary earlier in the day is to look at us visiting some centers in the Western Cape, just an in and out in the afternoon. If we could leave by 10 in the morning and be back by 1 o'clock and visit, because especially your centers that deal with substance abuse issues around, Honourable Deputy Minister, deals with youth, you know. So we need to link up with the Department of Social Development that is overseeing those centers, as well as the Portfolio Committee. So all those kind of arrangements needs to be made for us to visit these centers. So we can do oversight that on areas that are nearby and come back, and then we then touch the Eastern Cape and the Northwest. So we can then work on those issues. That we touch, if you look at the program structure of the department, as well as its key priorities, that we touch those areas in terms of service delivery. Yeah. So we can then target, I would tend to suggest that we go to the most rural areas in the Eastern Cape, as well as those in the Northwest. So can you agree on those principles, and then we will just look at ways of implementing it. Thank you. Honourable members, I'm sure Honourable Tuete and Honourable Mahar will assist us with the Eastern Cape issues, and then the other members of Northwest. And then Honourable Mindela Mula, will you look at targets for us for the Western Cape, the secure, the centres that deal with substance abuse, and secure centres, yeah, especially your youth centres. Then Honourable members, the reason why I've asked the DG to remain is we spoke about study tours. Now, every committee can go overseas twice as part of the study tour. But we had some discussions around issues, and I've asked the researcher in the committee to work on something, just a profile on the Netherlands for us. Now, they are so busy with England as such, so we don't have that at the moment. But the Netherlands has a very good system in terms of social development,
in terms of its social assistance, but also besides social security, also its other issues around services to families. And we tend to concentrate sometimes too much on social assistance and not look at the social welfare services, your youth centers, your care for the aged. They also have issues of, I think, the child benefits, your sickness benefits, your disability benefits, that I'm sure members will find very interesting and so on. So they have all these systems. So with your permission, I would like to make this available to you. The NCOP is also looking at a similar visit to the Netherlands. So I spoke to the chairperson and asked, can't we make it a combined visit, especially for the Netherlands? It will then also mean that we will be hosted once by the parliament and so on and so on. But we can then also learn and interact with our colleagues in the industry, if that's fine with the members. Then in terms of England, England also has a very good welfare system. But I've asked the DG just to give members a perspective around the Oxford program, around social policy. And it's a program that the department has been running in conjunction with Oxford University. And there is quite some huge benefit in for members of this committee. So, DG, over to you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. The School of Social Policy and Social Work at the University of Oxford has established a body called CASAST, which stands for Center for Analysis of South African Social Policy, which conducts a lot of research in South Africa for South African institutions, with South African institutions in many instances, be it sometimes HSRC, SSA, and the like. So they do research on a commission basis, but also research which is done by a sizable number of South African students in the UK, especially Oxford, studying social policy. A few South African students, some within the Department of Social Development, who are doing a PhD with Oxford. CASASP is running a social policy program which is also extended to staff of the Department of Social Development. But there is one that can be tailored for politicians such as yourselves, in the same way as there was for members of the Executive Council for Social Development, MECs from all provinces. This was done nearly a year or two ago. The same can be tailored for members of the portfolio committee. That program essentially could even run, it can be run over 2 weeks or shorter, depending on how you would like to have it concertinaed, but it can be done. It covers, I think the essence of it is to help people understand what is called evidence-based policy decision making, which effectively says that in making policy decisions, we shouldn't do so in the absence of research outcomes or research evidence, if you like. Which means that it certainly will help to not base policy on anecdotes, which tends to be the case in many interactions, be it at executive level or in parliament from time to time. So that would be very essential. It would cover the principles of the British welfare state, which actually will introduce us to the differences between social policy and developmental studies. Development
Tibetan studies being a paradigm that moved from the premise that the state is failing to do certain things, and that you can have other people taking charge of development where the state is unable to do certain things, in the same way as was the case, for an example, in South Africa during apartheid. But social policy becomes an instrument that proceeds from the premise that the state is the key driver of change and development in society, such as what South Africa has styled itself as, working towards becoming a developmental state, which places the state in the center of development. It's more than just an interventionist state, but really the one that leads development through making policy decisions that are based on evidence, with a view to bringing about desired changes in society. So that program will also entail booklets, in fact, not booklets, it's textbooks. Textbooks by erudite scholars in the area of social policy, and sometimes others who have written a lot on development studies. People like Mkanda Wira, who are is a Malawian national, but has lived in, I think in the meantime he still lives in Sweden now. He's a Swedish citizen. Has written extensively on this. He's led the UN Research Institute. What UN's RIST? What is it called? Yeah, but what does that acronym stand for? So, but people like that. Now, this program is also tailored in a manner that allows not just professors from Oxford to interact, but we have people from the University of York, like Bernard Bradshaw, who are able to participate in the program. You have, it's a pity, one professor who was at the University of but the London School of Economics has since passed, Peter Townsend. But that course is able to draw a number of experts from various parts of the UK to provide insights on social policy, how it works, which is relevant for the kind of portfolio committee that you are focusing on matters of social development. I suspect that if the NCOP, the Select Committee, is going to join you, I don't know whether they're simply joining you to the Netherlands, or they would wish to extend it to the UK. If they do, they will also stand to benefit a great deal. So, in a sense, this is an executive program that would be tailored according to your needs. The only shortcoming would be that there will be no translation services, because I will not be there. Mom Kiza. it will be largely people from the UK, either people who are on their teaching staff or people who are researchers who are sharing experiences with you. It might also include some South Africans who work for CASASP. In our department, one of the people who worked for CASASP, and in fact from time to time continues to work with them, is one of our GDGs, Mr. Weissman Makasela, who is expected to finish his PhD in the next few months, I should hope, with Oxford University, having spent, I think, about 6 years or so there. So if they should invite him to be part of the team that interacts with you, I hope you will not take a dim view of it. But you will find him a very resourceful fellow. That's essentially what the program would give you. If you like, I can ask Wiseman to, in fact, send me, or to the chair, an outline of the different modules. I just give you some ideas as to what the different modules would entail. But the broad thrust is, as I've shared with you already. We, in fact, my mind, I'm contemplating the same for the, for want of a better expression, the new crop of MECs, our minister and deputy minister. I'm sure it will be welcomed by the deputy minister and our minister. Otherwise, we will have a portfolio committee that's more empowered and take us to task all the time. So we will be planning that as well. That's basically it, Madam Chair. Thanks.
As there's another issue that I spoke to the minister around Brazil. I'm sure other women with Twitter agree with me because we discussed it. I said the Bolsa Familia program, and I think the DG of Health also touched on lessons that can be learned from Brazil. That the committee also contemplates visiting Brazil. In my interaction with the ministers, they can look at possibly three members when they go to Brazil, three members of the portfolio committee accompanying the minister on the trip to Brazil. So I think when the time comes, we need to consider who those three members are going to be from the portfolio committee. I think what we should then say is for every trip that we have, members should come back and have a report on what we've done so that we can share that information and those developments. You see, honourable members, if you look at what the DG said around social policy and our oversight role, it is very clear that we need to empower ourselves to effectively to play our oversight role continuously. I think it will also give us an opportunity to see what is new in the sector that we are doing oversight of, but also interact with hopefully the people from the House of Commons and also the Dutch Parliament. And some of us go to Brazil, also the Brazilian Parliament. I think that is very important. So, is there any questions of clarity around these issues or comments or proposals from members? Yes, DJ?
Madam Chair, there was a time when I thought there was a bit more time if the committee intends to join the health department. I suspect there will also be people from our side, social development, to go there. It has now come to my attention that trip is actually being undertaken next week. I thought it was the week after next. It is next week, and I'm not sure whether it gives the committee enough time to plan. I don't know what the protocols are in Parliament to get approval. I suspect they actually leave round about the 25th. Which is Monday or Tuesday or thereabouts. Or maybe they will be leaving over this weekend coming. So it might just present some challenges for the committee, I suspect. But I know that DSD in its own right is planning its own visits. The health visit is focusing on issues of primary health care, which is part of the response to the chronic illnesses. But social development is contemplating its own. It would be good, in fact, if we were able to go with health so that we hit several birds with one stone. The issues relating to how health can come to the party on issues of chronic illnesses, on the one hand, because, in fact, the issues that social development is going to explore are inextricably intertwined with the issues that health is concerned with. We'll be focusing on issues of the Zero Hunger campaign, which was launched successfully in Brazil, In fact, Mr. Zane Dango is more knowledgeable on that than I am. Zero hunger. Yes. But all those have, in a sense, Bodha Familia is a broad program that houses a number of interventions, including what was then called Progressa, which focuses on education, Zero Hunger. Yes, yeah, the number of programs that have come under what is now called Bodha Familia. So it would be a very important project for your committee to go and explore. But if it is Zero Hunger, then it would need more than just social development and health. I suspect departments such as agriculture would need to come to the party, because certain elements of that campaign includes the use of family farmers, so to speak, who contribute to that. And in the South African context, we may need to look at how the food banks link to that and how producer cooperatives can fit into that equation. So it would be a very useful exercise, really.
Could be in view of, because we haven't received any correspondence, nothing, around the bill also for the 24th of May. Can we then make the request that the committee be included in the social development trip, because it makes more sense? When is that going to be?
What we will do is work with the chair to find out what are suitable dates for the committee and work around that.
Oversight. We can also look at those dates, which is we've got from the 19th to the 6th of August, so that is like clear for the committee. And then you also have your constituency period from the 7th to the 16th of July, the 7th of June to the 16th, which is World Cup. I'm sure we can't go, but after the World Cup, yeah. So it's up to the 19th, the 6th of August, there's that time span that's quite accommodating for all of us. Yeah, for Brazil. What 19th of July to the 6th of August. In that time. Yeah, because DG, if DFID could sponsor the Oxford program, if it's possible to make inquiries or... If can we maybe just talk about it, myself and yourself, and then see how we can approach the different issues.
Madam Chair, I think we perhaps should discuss it separately. It may be that DFID may be persuaded to permit us to spend some of the money we've got on the budget. But if it happens that it doesn't cover everything, we would like to assume in your favor, Madam Chair, that you do have a budget of your own, which you can use for this purpose.
At times about Parliament, there are only a provision for two trips up, for a committee, which is in two trips in 5 years. Yes, that is. So that's why your other trip should be sponsored. Yeah. So it's in light of that. I think we can also then maybe approach other institutions by just putting our heads together to see what we can do. That's why when we say who's paying, it's not about being stingy. That is the reality of Parliament that we are sitting with. Mm-hmm.
It is totally conceivable that were we having three members of this committee join us to Brazil, that it wouldn't be too much of a hassle for us to do that, albeit that we also have constraints ourselves from the budget side. But I'm not sure whether your round trip to the Netherlands and the UK would be regarded as two trips or one. I would hope that it's still regarded as one trip. Okay. There, it could be partially sponsored, depending on what Diffit has to say about it. Yeah, thanks.
To the item. Okay. Then we received a letter from the minister. I received a letter from the minister, and I thought it wise to bring it to the committee. It's about training, leadership, and climate change in population, environment, and development. And the minister have nominated the chairperson to attend a lead program. That will be in three modules on climate change and environment. As a chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Water Affairs and Environment, and myself as chairperson for Social Development, have been nominated to attend the course. Is that fine with me?
Agreed.
Thanks. Honourable members, just to remind you that Honourable Member Hope and Twitter around the issues of oversight for the Eastern Cape that you'll forward to the Lindiwe. And on the Mula for the Western Cape, and then Honourable Member Mafolo and Nelson for Northwest. But those issues of SASA, we will be visiting SASA in both provinces. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. The meeting is adjourned.